welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann in for Rich Fisher. Without doubt, the internet has changed the way we work and play. In the world of medicine, the internet, and in particular, social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, are transforming the way health information is written about, delivered, and digested. An overwhelming majority of us search for health information online, and all it takes is a quick symptom search to find bona fide medical providers that offer advice, commentary, or are interested in hawking goods and services to you. My guest today, Dr. Kevin Poe, is known as social media's leading physician voice. He curates one of the most influential and widely visited medical websites called KevinMD.com. Poe has parlayed the explosive growth of his blog into other platforms, including regular commentary for CNN, USA Today, and The New York Times. He's now co-authored a new book entitled Establishing, Managing, and Protecting Your Online Reputation, a social media guide for physicians and medical practices. He's on the line today from his hometown and the site of his medical practice in Nashua, New Hampshire. Dr. Kevin Poe, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health.
Thank you very much.
I want to start off by asking where you got the idea for your new book. Like, how long has it been in the works?
Well, my book is Establishing, Managing, and Protecting Your Online Reputation, a social media guide for physicians and medical practices. And it's a culmination of my social media journey. I've been involved in social media like blogs, Facebook, and Twitter since 2004. And whenever I talk to other doctors and physicians and medical practices about social media and online reputation, I get confused looks. I get questions like, why should I care about this? Why should I care about blogs and Facebook and Twitter? And I wanted to express to them how important, first of all, an online reputation is and how easy it is for doctors to control their online reputation using these free tools. And a lot of this information is scattered on the web, and it's sometimes difficult to find. So I thought the time was right for a book, not by a marketing professional, but from an actual physician who practices every day and draws from his own social media experience and explain why online reputation is important and what are some easy ways for physicians and medical practices to leverage a social media presence to maximize their online reputation.
So is your intended audience for this book, I mean, it's right there in the title, but you're aiming it at the medical practitioners or practices. Do you think that non-medical professionals will find use in the book?
I do. Although a lot of what I talk about is aimed towards doctors and other providers, I also tell stories from the perspective of engaged patients. One of the strengths of the book are anecdotes and stories from a variety of healthcare personalities, mostly doctors, but I also have perspectives from patients as well. We have Dave DeBroncart, otherwise known as E-Patient Dave, as well as Carrie Marone Sparling, and they talk about how important it is for doctors to have some type of presence online, and they give their own experiences when they Google their physicians and try to rate doctors. And I think that the whole topic of physician ratings, online reputation, is tremendously important to both doctors and patients, because not only is it important for doctors to manage and establish online reputation, it's important for patients to know what's available about what their doctors, information about their doctors online, because more and more patients are Googling their doctors online.
Right. So I looked over the book and I came away very convinced that it is important for a doctor to manage, as you say, their online reputation, because they're going to get one whether they take charge of it or not. And I think you have some important statistics in the book. For example, how many or what percentage of patients do we know both look at health information online or specifically, for example, Google their doctor to select a doctor?
Sure. So more and more patients, like other fields, if you take a look at fields like books and restaurants and movies, they're going online for information. And, of course, healthcare is no exception. If you look at the latest statistics from Pew Internet, they found that 72% of Internet users go online to look for health information, and about 44%, so almost half of patients, are going online to research their doctors. So I think that type of transparency was unheard of about 5 years ago, but now we have health information on the web, we have information about doctors and medical practices as well as hospitals on the web, and more and more patients are going to be going there as their first choice, whereas back in the day, they would rely on word of mouth, yellow pages, and a newspaper. Now they're going to be relying on Google. So I think it's tremendously important that patients vet what they read online and that doctors have some semblance of control of how not only they appear online, but also how patients should interpret health information online.
So how can a patient be advised to know a reliable rating site? And I'm just going to read a quick list of the sites you mention in the book and have specific content about. There's Angie's List, Doctor.com, Doctor Score, Google Plus Local, Healthcare Reviews, Health Grades, Insider Pages, Kudzu, RateMD's, Vitals, Yelp, ZocDoc, etc. How is one to make sense of this? If I'm the doctor, I'm overwhelmed. You're telling me I have to monitor all these sites and pay attention to how people are rating or scoring me online? Or can one sort of blanket statement suffice for all of them?
Well, there are a lot of different ways doctors can get a presence online. A lot of physicians that I talk to, they're a little bit skeptical in online reputation. They don't feel that it's important. But I always reply to them that doctors already have an online presence, whether they know it or not. And it's precisely of those dozen sites that you mentioned, they're already profiling doctors and having information about them online. You know, there are the most prominent being Yelp, Health Grades, and Vitals, for instance. And the problem with these online profiles is that a lot of it can contain inaccurate information. It can contain wrong board certification, wrong contact information, wrong phone number and address. And when that doctor's name is Googled and they don't have any other social media presence, like a blog or on Twitter, this is the profile that comes up. This is the information that patients are reading about them. And that's not really the best foot that they want put forward online. So I think that these sites have limited use. I think that if a doctor wants to go online and claim a profile on that site and correct that information, I think by all means do so. But I think a far better way is to be more proactive and control their online reputation by building online content. And I think one of the easiest ways is to go on LinkedIn, for instance. I like that site a lot. It's a professional networking site where a physician can essentially put their online resume and talk about their professional accomplishments and positions that they can put on this profile, and this LinkedIn profile get ranked high when their name is Googled and can push down any of these third-party sites that can contain inaccurate information. It's one of the best ways that physicians can be proactive about these sites. Now, from a patient standpoint, I get a lot of questions from patients asking me how relevant these third-party rating sites can be. And there was a study, I think within the last few months, that showed on average doctors received about 2 to 3 ratings per doctor on these sites. So I think that a lot of the information not only could be inaccurate, but the ratings that are on it, there's just not enough to make an accurate representation of whether a doctor is good or bad. So from a patient standpoint, I think these physician rating sites have limited use, and I think they certainly play a role, but it should only be one piece of the complete research process that goes into choosing a doctor. So I don't think transparency is going away, but I think that we have a lot of room for improvement when it comes to these third-party rating sites.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today is Dr. Kevin Poe, author of the new book, Establishing, Managing, and Protecting Your Online Reputation, A Social Media Guide for Physicians and Medical Practices. He's also the mastermind behind the widely read blog, KevinMD.com. And Kevin, I want to go back to these rating sites because I read your blog and I've looked at it many times. In fact, I've been lucky enough to be posted on there a few times. And you have stories, do you not, of physicians who have tried to sue or have claimed that their reputation has been besmirched, and so they've tried to take action in order to protect their reputation. And it seems like you advise against that.
Absolutely. I think that taking court action or filing a lawsuit should be the absolute last resort, because first off, I think there are so many better ways where a doctor can take control of their online reputation. But the problem with suing is, number one, it's rarely successful. They interviewed a spokesperson from Yelp, and they specifically said that they would not honor any provider request to take down a negative review because it's going to infringe on a patient's right to free speech. And there was a case in Minnesota where a neurologist actually sued a patient's son because a patient posted a bad review of him and didn't like what he had to say. And after 4 years of court action and tens of thousands of dollars and time spent and lawyers involved, that case was actually dismissed a few weeks ago. And not only was all that effort ineffective, a lot of the media coverage from that neurologist who sued this patient's son was associated with his name when his name was Google. So by taking court action, by filing this lawsuit, in effect, it's made a bad online situation even worse. So I think that lawsuits aren't the answer. Transparency that stem from these online sites and online reputation, it's here to stay, and doctors need more constructive ways to deal with it than lawsuits.
Now, you talked about your journey as a blogger starting in about 2004, the early days, the Wild West of the Internet, and I've seen one of your keynotes online, and you do give a great keynote addresses, or multiple keynote addresses now as a widely sought-out speaker. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share your story of how you got online and what led you to blog and that journey.
Sure. So this was, like you said, back in 2004, and blogging was just in its infancy, and let alone blogging in the healthcare field. I always like to say that whatever trend is happening in any other field, healthcare is always 2 to 3 years behind. So blogging was really in its infancy. And I think it all started when I was talking to my brother-in-law back in 2004, and he noticed that I had a lot to say about medicine and healthcare, and he said, "Kevin, you should write about your thoughts in a blog." And I really didn't know what blogs were, so I went to Blogger, which was Google's free blogging service, and then I started KevinMD. I would share a few interesting medical links, but I wasn't really sure where this was going to go or how long this was going to last. And in the fall of 2004, I'm sure we remember there was a major drug recall. Vioxx was recalled, and there were hourly headlines on the drug, and I'm sure that your own patients would be confused and would ask you questions, because Vioxx was a pretty common drug at the time. And I wrote a blog post giving my suggestions that these people can ask their own doctors about. And a few days later, I walked into the exam room, and that patient, first thing that she asked me was, "Did you write that blog post at Vioxx? Because I read it this morning." And I really sat there stunned, because I didn't realize that anyone would be reading what I wrote on the web. And I realized at that time how powerful social media could be in communicating and connecting with patients. And I think it's grown certainly since then, and especially as more and more patients are going online and researching health information. And I think it's tremendously important for doctors to go on social media, because that's where patients are, and either be sources of reputable health information or guide them to better health websites. Because as we know, there's a lot of bad information on the web. Less than half of patients are checking the source of what they read online. So I think it's up to physicians to become authoritative sources of medical information on the web, because if we aren't, patients are going to go to less desirable authorities. They're going to go to people who promote anti-vaccine stances, and they have tremendous influence on the web. So I think that if we don't have influence online, we're going to eventually lose our standing as medical authorities, and that simply can't happen.
At some point, you became known as social media's leading physician voice, and that, I guess, maybe wasn't in 2004, but you mentioned the time, that occasion of going into the exam room and your patient confronting you with your own writing. How did it grow, or can you share the tale of the exponential growth and where you've gone from there?
Well, I think it's certainly a matter of time. There are only a handful of physicians who've been involved with social media as long as I have. And just simply a matter of time and persistence. I've had an evolution of my blog since its beginning. Blogging has changed a lot since then. I used to do my own writing, then I started including other voices, but I think it was important to hear what other doctors are saying. And then I started including policy experts and hearing what policy experts are saying. And then I started including patients, because it's important to hear what patients are saying. And now I have every stakeholder in healthcare having some type of voice on my site. And I think that has a lot of resonance, because when it comes to healthcare, there are so many different views, so many different perspectives, and we need to hear from each other. And I think social media lends itself to that. So I think over the years, those voices, whether it's from a patient, from a policy expert, from a doctor, it's resonated with the public. Because if you read the comments after a lot of the posts, there's some pretty vigorous debate that goes on there. And as you know, with healthcare, there's always something to talk about, especially the past few years with healthcare reform. And going forward, there always will be more things to talk about. So I think the fact that I have a forum where people can share their views, no matter what political stripe they belong to, and discuss it with other healthcare stakeholders in the comment section, I think that has a certain resonance, and that's one of the reasons why it's grown to where it is today.
And you have regularly, I guess, over 100,000 subscribers, readers every day?
combine RSS, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, there's a combined 100,000 subscribers. But in terms of viewership, it generates between 30 to 40,000 visits per day.
Wow. And so it was that volume of web traffic that got you the attention of what I'd call traditional publishing or traditional media?
Well, at first it was the novelty of having a physician blog because there weren't that many. So a lot of my early articles, when I talked to newspaper reporters and television reporters, it would just be about the novelty, about a doctor who was on social media. But now it's certainly grown since then because now there are a lot of doctors involved with social media. And I think that the media, as well as patients, they want to hear what we have to say. And a lot of the things that goes on behind closed doors, a lot of the things that goes on in exam rooms, patients simply don't know about. For instance, patients just don't know why they have to wait hours in a waiting room. They don't know why sometimes doctors can't return phone calls. And I think that it's important that we need to get our story out. And there's a lot of interest in a physician point of view. I always like to cite this Gallup survey. This was back in 2009 during the height of the health reform debate. And they asked the country who they trusted the most when it came to health care reform. And they gave the options as the president, Congress, politicians, or physicians. And physicians actually came first. The patients still trust what doctors have to say. And by having more doctors on social media sites, I think it certainly gives us a voice, and mainstream media has certainly capitalized on that. And not only me, but other physicians have received mainstream media opportunities because of their social media voice. And these are opportunities that we wouldn't have had if it wasn't for blogs and us taking advantage of it.
What are some of the other venues in which you've published, from your leading from your social media work?
The most prominent would be USA Today. I'm a member of their editorial board of contributors. So once every couple of months, they ask me to write a column, and I talk about things that I think are important that needs to be heard. For instance, the primary care shortage. I've talked about physician burnout. More recently, I talked about the pros and cons of virtual online visits, as well as the controversy surrounding energy drinks. And it's certainly a much larger platform. It goes from my platform of tens of thousands to a platform of millions, and it's certainly an opportunity I'm tremendously appreciative of. And I realize it's a powerful opportunity to, again, give a voice to practicing primary care physicians. Back in the late 2000s, I had the opportunity to go on CBS Evening News and, again, talk about defensive medicine and medical malpractice from a physician's point of view. And again, that was an eye-opening experience because of all the doctors they could have chosen for this story. They chose this private practice doctor in southern New Hampshire. But I think one of the reasons that they chose me is because I had a blog where other doctors in the comments can voice their frustrations when it came to defensive medicine. And at that time, it was a raw, unfiltered view of what doctors were really talking about, and they wanted to put that on national television. And I've also published in a variety of medical journals as well, talking about, again, some of the things that I think are important going forward. For instance, with this book and online reputation, we've talked about social media and how important it is for doctors to be cognizant of it. But I think the larger point is that these are opportunities that I had no idea that I would have during medical school and residency. As you know, they don't train you to be media savvy. They don't train you to connect with television stations and newspaper reporters, and they don't tell you how important it is how important public relations is, and these are things that are tremendously important if we have any control of our own profession as our healthcare system changes. And again, I'm appreciative of these opportunities that come up.
So I wonder, do you consider yourself mostly a blogger, a social media person, or a writer, a pundit? Does a designation like that really matter?
Probably not. I guess if the answer would probably be all of the above. I think that if there were one thing, it would probably be a commentator, because eventually social media is going to be less siloed. Eventually we're not going to say blogger or someone who's just focusing on Twitter. I think social media eventually is going to be a combination of all the platforms that are out there, because I think that one of the issues is that social media platforms is constantly fluid, whereas MySpace gave way to Facebook, and you know, blogs, some say, are going out of style. I think social media is always evolving. So if you could just say, I would describe myself as an online commentator, and that would cover, that would future-proof me against any of these social media changes going forward.
So you mentioned you're in private practice, and I wonder two things. Number one, you could make a claim that you're busy enough with your writing, your blogging, now your book authoring. I mean, we see book authors just take time out of their, I guess, regular lives. They go around touring the country and you know, doing book talks. So how does being in practice inform your writing?
That's a great question. I think that is tremendously important to be in practice, because it lends, obviously, a certain credibility, but also it gives me a front row seat as to some of the difficulties that other doctors are facing, whether it's the rising cost of health care, the covering the uninsured, doing pre-authorization paperwork. These are all things that physicians face every day, and if I'm not facing it myself and I write about it, I think I'm going to lose a certain credibility. Besides, I do like what I do. I'm an internal medicine physician. I've been doing primary care for just over 10 years now. And yes, we certainly have our troubles, and certainly there are difficult conditions. But I think the bottom line is that I do love being a doctor. But I certainly do like some of the new media opportunities that arise. So I think that I'm fortunate to be in a position where I can still practice and see patients, but I also have opportunities that I wasn't trained for in medical school and be kind of at the forefront and experimenting with how these new technologies is influencing medicine going forward.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. My guest is Dr. Kevin Poe. He's an internist, and he runs the website kevinmd.com. He's also the author of a new book called Establishing, Managing, and Protecting Your Online Reputation, a social media guide for physicians and medical practices. So we were talking before the idea about how you are in private practice. And one of the trends that I've noticed in the last 3 years, and I'm a program director and seeing my graduates in droves go into employed physicians. That is, they're taking jobs essentially working for hospitals where they're employees of the hospital. And when I look at your blog, I see lots of difficulties for people who are trying to stay in practice. And one of the, you mentioned how in med school we don't learn about public relations. We certainly don't really learn about business. How are you managing to keep things afloat, or where do you see your practice going?
Well, I just want to correct that. I'm an employed physician. I used to be in private practice. Now I'm employed now. But just speaking to a lot of the other physicians in private practice, I think that is tremendously difficult, and their numbers certainly are going down. And it's just because of the hassles and the administrative hassles and the bureaucracy that they have to deal with. So it's no wonder that more and more of them are trading the independence for the stability, for the fact that they can focus on medicine and have others deal with the paperwork of an employed position. I think with healthcare reform and the Affordable Care Act, there's certainly a trend towards larger conglomerates of healthcare because they do want to somewhat standardize care and reduce variability, and it takes large organizations to do that. So I certainly don't see that trend backing off anytime soon. And certainly I talk to a lot of private practice doctors, and they're simply leaving the system. I think one of our fellow bloggers, Rob Lamberts, and he recently is a cash-only physician now, and he's a great doctor, but you're seeing some of the frustrations that a lot of these doctors face today, and they're leaving them with a stark option: either join these employed groups or leave the system entirely and not take insurance.
So are you part of that trend? In other words, when you started, you were in private practice, but you quickly sort of saw the trend that was occurring, and so your group reformed itself or sold itself to a local hospital practice?
Yeah, it was the latter option. The group sold itself to a local hospital practice.
Okay. And you talked about the Affordable Care Act, and I wonder what you see as... Do doctors, or at least the doctors you see, or who the folks that write on your blog or that guest post, in general, in the profession, is there favorability of the Affordable Care Act, or does it split both ways?
It certainly splits both ways. I think that if you talk to doctors as a whole, they can't even agree what the best, just like the general public, they can't agree what the best course of action going forward. So my stance when it comes down to our healthcare problems is that the problems that we're facing, especially the rising cost of healthcare, it's too big for one ideology to solve. And I think that we need ideas from both ends of the political spectrum. So that's why I make a concerted effort on my own site to include views from both the progressive and conservative point of view. Because, yes, we do need to cover the uninsured, and certainly universal health care needs to happen, but we also need to take more personal responsibility for ourselves. We also need to reform a medical malpractice system. So we need ideas from both ends of the political spectrum in order to solve our growing healthcare cost problem, because if left unchecked, it's going to consume almost 20% of the gross domestic product. So speaking to doctors at a whole, you're going to find doctors all across the spectrum. You're going to find doctors who are single-payer advocates, and you're going to find, for every one of those, you're going to find doctors who want to repeal the Affordable Care Act. So I don't think that you could get doctors to agree what's best going forward. But I think that there are great ideas on both ends of the political spectrum, and it should never be an either-or choice. But I think the best solution going forward would be something down the middle that can incorporate both progressive and conservative ideas.
And down the middle would include then a sort of a public option, but also being able to maintain somewhat of the free enterprise system?
Well, we're going to kind of like policy specifics here, and I don't profess to have the right answer whether that includes a public option or not, and certainly that was debated. I think there are pros and cons to each option, and some would say that having a public option would be one. And I'm not enough of a policy expert to comment, but I think that in general we do need not only to cover all the uninsured, and no matter what system that is, we do need to cover the uninsured, but I think that also in doing that we also need patients to take more responsibility for themselves as well.
Do you see the Affordable Care Act having real potential to bend the cost curve, as it's called, to really bring down healthcare spending, or is it just too early to tell at this point?
I think it's too early to tell. The Affordable Care Act, its first priority was to cover the uninsured, and did an adequate job of that. But whether it remains to be seen whether it does enough to bend the cost curve. You always look at Massachusetts as the bellwether state, because the Affordable Care Act was modeled after the reforms in Massachusetts, and Massachusetts, as you know, has 97 or 98 plus percent of its constituents insured. But now they're running into problems when it comes to rising healthcare costs. They're not able to bend it themselves, and they're finding that they don't have enough primary care doctors to see all these newly insured patients. And there was a recent report in California that essentially stated the same thing, that it is not enough primary care doctors to see newly insured patients. So does it do enough to bend the cost curve? I think it does better than nothing. I certainly think much, much more can be done, and whether it will be done going forward will certainly depend on our politicians in Washington.
Kevin Poe, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. I wish you success with your new book, and I want to thank you for being on Studio Tulsa on Health.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. The book's available on kevinmd.com. It's also available on greenbranch.com/reputation, and it's also available in ebook form. So thank you very much.
Kevin Poe is an internist and social media guru at kevinmd.com. His new book is titled Establishing, Managing, and Protecting Your Online Reputation, A Social Media Guide for Physicians and Medical Practices. Well, that's Studio Tulsa on Health for today. Our show is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The opinions of our guests and commentators are their own and do not reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. If you missed a recent show, you can see them on our website at publicradiotulsa.org. Just look for the Studio Tulsa banner. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.